Good read, me. M770 KTTH, the Jason Rand Show. Brian Suits filling in. It's time to find out what's trending.
What's trending? Big picture.
Let me say what's trafficking. And let me start with this, by the way. You recall about a year ago in Mississippi, a Marine Corps C-130 went down mysteriously from high altitude, 20,000 feet. Marine Corps Special Operations Raider team was killed on board the aircraft, as well as the crew. The widows of a bunch of the Marine Raiders are doing a thing. They need your help. They went to the crash site and they filled rucksacks, or as you civilians say, backpacks. They filled rucksacks with soil from the crash site, and they are walking from Mississippi to Camp Lejeune, North Carolina. You can help them defray some costs along the way, hotels and wear and tear and things like that. Go to Rucking Raiders, one word, RuckingRaiders.com, RuckingRaiders.com, and you can help them with this. When they get to Camp Lejeune, the intent is they're going to plant a tree, a grove for all the men, all the Marine Raiders who died on that flight. So RuckingRaiders.com. Well, this is interesting. Late last night, in the aftermath of the, just to be honest with you, the disastrous press conference with Vladimir Putin, not the reading of the, Putin read his prepared statement. You saw his agenda was about the Iran nuclear deal, which he wants America to un-tear up. Then also he wants us to just call the ball and get out of Syria and just throw our arms up and say, I guess Bashar Assad is going to be in charge forever, which is probably not that bad of a deal. But so those were his agenda points. He didn't even really get into Crimea. Trump read his. It was the questions that caused such a titter amongst the Anderson Coopers of the world. And specifically, the one answer where Trump said that he had asked Putin, did you interfere in our elections? And he answered strongly no. So he kind of threw our intelligence community under the bus. Well, this back here in the U.S., Paul Ryan, Speaker of the House, even though he's not running for re-election, and he should probably hand the office off to Kevin McCarthy. But from Ryan on down, on the Republican side and on the Democrat side, of course. The Democrat side, I'm sure they were passing around defibrillators and Depends. But on the Republican side, there was a pretty round criticism, including from Newt Gingrich. When you lose Newt, man, you really need to sit down and have a think. So the announcement late last night, not the announcement, but all of a sudden last night on the White House agenda, that today at 2 p.m. at the White House, there is basically an emergency meeting with congressional leaders. And this includes Democrats, by the way. So is this the White House putting the fire out? I don't know. I've got no idea. It seems to me that if that's what it was, it would have been scheduled for 9 a.m. D.C. Because believe it or not, they actually do things at 9 a.m. in Washington, D.C. that involve government. But this one is 2 p.m. local time. So that's going to be 11 a.m. here on the West Coast. So what is going to be the content of the meeting? You can only speculate. It's just that the timing of it looks really curious, and it looks like somebody on the president's staff, probably John Kelly, saw what happened. And again, John Kelly, recall John Kelly, former enlisted Marine, gets commissioned, a cold warrior, a guy who spent the 80s in uniform, training to support a general defensive ground war in Europe from Norway, seeing an American president saying those things about Vladimir Putin. I'm assuming that he talked with Paul Ryan's staff and other congressional staffs and said, look, we're going to address this. Come to the White House 2 p.m. So anyway, that's what's going on. In a couple of minutes here, Anthony Bourdain. I'll be honest with you. I didn't really watch the show that he had on CNN. I'm not such a huge fan of cooking that I watch shows about other people. Parts Unknown. I've seen a few episodes.
I'm a big fan.
And you know what I liked about it was that he drank. He drank when he ate, because that's what you do. You know, booze accompanies food. And I love that he was an unabashed, a fan of the barley, of the wine of the barley, if you know what I'm saying, which is beer, and other kinds of hard booze. Wherever he went, he usually drank the local, if there was a local. And that's why he was always so grumpy in Muslim countries. I got to be honest with you. So Anyway, he gave an interview about a month before he died. And wait till you hear how he describes Bill Clinton. And so I'll get to that here in just a minute. I mean, this is going to blow you away. Now, I got to say, now I'm a fan. And I guess, producer Darren, that show was on for like six seasons, right?
Oh, I think it's on its 10th.
And it's going to be on forever in repeat. Is it a good show? I mean, like I said, I'm not into it. I like that he travels.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the part I liked about it.
I've learned more from that show than I think any other, just about different cultures.
Yeah, because he wasn't sitting there showing you how to cook.
No, it was hardly any cooking at all. He'd sit down with chefs from different regions and show them their dishes, but there's no real cooking. It's mostly about culture.
Yeah, he's going around and he's boozing it up and eating crab and seafood and things like that. And so wait till you hear what he said about Bill Clinton. This is going to blow you. This is something that should have been said in 1998, right before the impeachment. All right. We've been waiting, so let's bring him on. What is the fallout in Helsinki? So what else is trending with Simon Owens?
What's trending in Trumplandia?
All right, let's bring him on. Simon Owens is in Helsinki still, 24 hours after the summit meeting. Simon, what did they talk about? What's your best guess about what they talked about behind closed doors that we're not being told?
Well, I mean, the whole thing was 2 hours, but some of that there were advisors present. But for at least 2 hours, it was just the two presidents with only translators joining them in the room. And unless those translators break their vow of silence, we're unlikely to ever really find out what they talked about. I mean, the leaders said that they discussed Syria, Ukraine, North Korea, Iran, you know, all the global security crises of the day. And they both said they also discussed election meddling. And this is where President Trump said, he just said, it's not Russia. I will say this. I don't see any reason why it would be. And the president said he had great confidence in his intelligence people. He said, I'll tell you that President Putin was extremely strong and powerful in his denial today. So it appeared to be the president accepting President Putin's denial over his own intelligence experts.
And then Putin's statement, he came out and to him, some of his foreign policy priorities are the resolution of things in Syria. It appears that Bashar Assad is not going anywhere. And then secondly, he came out denouncing Trump's dropping the Iran deal. So is that a pretty accurate reflection of what he talked about back there, or were they just chummy and backslapping?
No, I mean, I think there were big disputes, and the election meddling was always going to be the big subject. But I think it was also striking how they listed this sort of shopping list of crises that they talked about: Syria, Ukraine, Iran. And for all these two leaders saying they want to improve U.S.-Russia relations, those are three big crises where they're on totally different pages as to how to resolve them. And you can add nuclear weapons to that as well. There is no sign of any kind of breakthrough on any of those areas. You know, they talked for hours, as you say, but they didn't really have much to report in terms of agreement. And that is potentially going to be a problem, I suspect. They both said that this is step one towards improving U.S.-Russia relations. President Trump said he believes U.S.-Russia relations had never been worse. So they both said they wanted to see that improve. But when they talked about the big crises, they're very much a long way apart. And it suggested to me that there was there wasn't much breakthrough and not much hope for them coming any closer. And so in the meantime, they're going to remain on different pages on these really big, pressing global issues.
And then some last question. Sometimes at the end of these kind of things, even though this one was very informal, with no prior agenda, they usually announce if there's a follow-on meeting. Is there any rumor of 6 months from now, another one-on-one meeting, anything like that?
No, there's not. And whether President Trump is ready to invite President Putin to the White House, I suspect that would be a step too far. My hunch is that, you know, this has been, not much came out of this one. And so maybe they've set things in place and their officials can follow up on it in the coming months. And then they'll turn around and say, okay, we've had 6 months, let's have another meeting. It's time, you know, we've made progress on these issues. And this time, yeah, there will be a set agenda. And we'll see what we can come up with in terms of agreed, you know, fixed points to take forward. But at the moment, I'm not sure there's too much to follow up on from this, except a desire to keep these going. So there will be times at various international summits down over the next months and a couple of years when they will both be there. And it would, you'd have thought they would presumably keep having what they call pull-aside meetings, short one-on-one meetings. Whether there is enough there to actually have everybody make the effort to come all the way to another country like Finland, just for a discussion about, you know, President Trump saying that he backs Vladimir Putin's assessment about election meddling, I don't know if they feel that was worth doing that again. But as they both say that this is step one, and they are miles apart on some big issues, so they're going to have to talk again if there's going to be any breakthrough. I suppose is what can the officials do in the interim?
Yeah. All right. Well, Simon Owen, grab a liquid souvenir and make your flight. And thanks for joining us. There he goes, a spiffing chap. Simon Owens, when we come back, wait till you hear what Anthony Bourdain says, his bottom line about Bill and Hillary Clinton, just a month before he died, right after this. It is Brian Suits filling in for Jason Rantz on The Jason Rantz Show, AM 770 KETTH. AM 770 KETTH. It is The Jason Rantz Show. Brian Suits filling in for Jason Rantz. And coming up, a Ballard homeowner uses a firearm to defend himself. I know. It's of course, I'm sure all the local news is stopping their broadcast and giving you that story, but we'll give it to you. And just because I have that annoying historic context that keeps informing my different opinions, I do know that while I was disturbed about what happened in Helsinki yesterday, it was not treason. So John Brennan, former CIA director, can just something off on that one. He was the most strident former government official. But on the other hand, I would just remind with the newfound liberal fear of Russia, which of course didn't exist from Ted Kennedy on down in the 80s. I just remind you what your icon said just 2 years ago.
The Russians can't change us or significantly weaken us. They are a smaller country. They are a weaker country. Their economy doesn't produce anything that anybody wants to buy except oil and gas.
Yeah, so take that. Okay, so just pull it down a notch there, Ms. Pelosi, and change your depends on that one. But anyway, like I say, doors will be closed at the White House today. Somebody is going to be smacking some sense into a certain president whose biggest weakness, as near as I can tell, is that he is like a seat cushion in that he retains the impression of the last person who sat on him. Well, as Darren and I were talking about, Anthony Bourdain, who was the host of Parts Unknown, and which I now have a new appreciation of Anthony Bourdain, who apparently committed suicide, and it really was a real suicide. It wasn't one of those Michael Hutchins in excess, you know, things. It was an actual suicide, evidently. But he gave an interview to a publication called Popula. They sat on it for, you know, I guess a month out of respect for Anthony Bourdain. They just published it. Anthony Bourdain, longtime New York liberal, a very active Democrat, contributing money, and he was one of the guys absolutely who drank the Clinton Kool-Aid. He drank it right from the fire hose, just full on, just wiping it all across his chin and his face. Yeah! Just give me that Clinton fire hose, right? Here's what he said right before he died about Bill and Hillary Clinton. Bourdain described Bill as, quote, a piece of S entitled rapey, gropey, grabby, disgusting, and the way that he and she destroyed these women and the way that everyone went along and are blind to this, screaming apparent hypocrisy and venality. It was effing monstrous. That would not have flown today, close quote. Well, yes, I can reread that entire quote.
Yeah!
Quote, Bill Clinton is a piece of S entitled rapey, gropey, grabby, disgusting, and the way that he and she destroyed these women and the way that everyone went along and are blind to this, screamingly apparent hypocrisy and venality, close quote. And you know what? I'm not sure. Wasn't that his reelection campaign slogan, rapey, gropey, and grabby? Were those the missing the missing dwarves. Were there originally 15? And it was dopey and clumsy, and then rapey, gropey, and grabby. But that's not all. He said, I guess one would be entitly. Yeah, I have to read this a third time. Quote, Bill Clinton is a piece of S. Entitled, rapey, gropey, grabby, disgusting, and the way that he and she destroyed these women, and the way that everyone went along and are blind to this. It was effing monstrous. That would not have flown today, close quote, Bourdain said of the Lewinsky affair in that case. Bourdain conceded that he was against the impeachment of Clinton. He did say straightforwardly that he would never, under any circumstances, vote for Bill Clinton today. Hillary was also not spared in the TV star's heated focus as he expressed disappointment over how she responded to sexual assault allegations directed at Harvey Weinstein, a big-time Clinton donor who is now facing multiple indictments, in fact, of being an entitled rapey, gropey, grabby, disgusting person. Let me get that the order right. He says, quote, but I will tell you that as frightening as that was at times, when I sat there with Asia, his girlfriend at the time, as she texted her sisters, watching the Clinton apology on Weinstein, and she's watching this statement, there was a lot of anticipation. People were really hoping she'd come out with a, I don't know, let's just say with something different. I immediately tweeted my disappointment, very much shaped by what I saw around me. And I will tell you that it was really effing frightening, the reaction to that. You know, I voted for her, close quote. What he tweeted, what he's talking about was Hillary Clinton had a chance to denounce Weinstein. She didn't do it. He tweeted out, Hillary's clearly not responsible for anything Weinstein. That's screamingly obvious. Her response to questions, though, has been uninspiring. So that's Anthony Bourdain. Now suddenly, postmortem, I'm a huge fan of his. I'm going to start watching that show. But so no response out of the Clinton camp about the fact that Bill is rapey, gropey, and grabby. And of course, no surprise out of our camp, because that's what everyone said. We'll be back here in just a second. Yes, a firearm used to defend hearth and home in Ballard when we come back. It is the Jason Rand Show. Brian Suits filling in. AM 770 KTTH. The Jason Rand Show, AM 770 KTTH. Brian Suits in here for the week. Jason is on vacation. And by the way, can we say where he went? Is he revealing? Is he updating anything on the gram? The
he was in Hamburg, Germany, and now I believe he is in Budapest.
Oh, a good choice. Lovely place, Budapest. Couple of things here. The newly elected Democrat congressperson, the self-described socialist, has already spoken out all about capitalism, and she is, I think, satisfying, or at least answering to anyone's satisfaction, that she doesn't understand how unemployment numbers are yielded and how capitalism works. But I'm sorry, there's breaking news. Breaking news from firearms in Seattle, where a citizen, we're getting reports that a citizen actually used a firearm to defend his or her home. Minutes after a Ballard homeowner, this is Sunday night, minutes after a Ballard homeowner called 911 early Sunday to report that he had shot at an intruder. A man was dropped off at a Ballard hospital with a gunshot wound to the abdomen, according to Seattle police. The homeowner was sleeping when he heard what sounded like someone breaking into his house in the 6700 block of 25th Avenue Northwest around 4:15 a.m., which is not normal, according to a Seattle police online blotter post. He armed himself. He skinned that smoke wagon, is what I'm saying. He jerked that pistol and with a handgun, and he found an intruder who had already broken into an enclosed mudroom and was trying to break into the main house, the post said. I don't know whether or not the homeowner said, I'm your huckleberry. However, which is the legal warning that you must give in the state of Washington, last I heard. Anyway, the homeowner fired a single round through a door in the mudroom, then called 911. By the way, love your order of things. When officers responded, a neighbor reported seeing a dark-colored station wagon drive away from the victim's house. 10 minutes later, police were notified that a 35-year-old man with a gunshot wound arrived at Swedish Medical Center in Ballard. The injured man was taken to Harborview Medical Center, the Pacific Northwest premier trauma center. His condition on Monday was not known. I know what I'm hoping for. It's not known as of yesterday. Several blocks away, officers came across a man and a woman standing outside a dark-colored station wagon, and they saw fresh blood inside and outside of the vehicle leading to the hospital. The car also appeared to contain stolen property. Those two were detained and questioned. And you might want to have a seat for this. Officers arrested the man after discovering that he had an outstanding warrant. The woman, who is the sister of the man who caught the bullet by his belly button, was interviewed and released.
Yeah!
You know why? Because she had absolutely nothing to do with the scoff, with the douchebaggery and the scofflawry that happened just a little bit before. So again, news you're probably not going to hear from another media outlet in Seattle.
That's a 101 book on how not to be a criminal. I think it did everything wrong.
Well, the time is
straight to the hospital.
4:50. I know. Well, that's the thing is, it's, you know, it's not like you can't call the wolf like in Pulp Fiction. You know, he's not going to pull a round out of your guts.
Or force a veterinarian to stitch you up.
Yeah.
At gunpoint.
Again, yeah. Or even what they do in Heat. In Heat, they took Val Kilmer to like a physician's assistant or something.
Oh, I don't know. That's before me.
Yeah. Well, as it turns out, it's recorded and it's online and you can actually download it and watch it.
Is that how this works?
You know, that's what I said about Gone with the Wind. And I got away with that for almost 10 years of marriage.
Oh, I guess
finally,
I'm
my wife said, no, we can't continue until you see Gone with the Wind.
I am a big Pulp Fiction fan, so my argument is
The trick, by the way, paint eyeballs on your eyelids, and then you can just knock off for 2 hours. So like we were saying earlier, I don't know what the King County prosecutor is going to do about this. I haven't heard anything in the wind. I know that Washington is in Texas. I also know that King County ain't Snohomish County, and it's not Clallam County. I know in Clallam County they'd be naming streets after this particular gent, but I'm not sure what the King County prosecutor will do. But I'm here to tell you, like I said in the 6 a.m. hour, to the random gun owner there on 25th Northwest in Ballard, you must articulate that you felt a threat to your life and or family. You do that, and that is kryptonite to any prosecutor. If they're dumb enough to even bring you in and question you, okay, they probably shouldn't. But if they do, then you articulate that you felt a threat to your life. And then, by the way, also say you were firing a warning shot, and you didn't know the guy's ample abdomen was behind the. It's his fault. He was trying to break in. So like I said, this is not Texas. But then again, you know, it's not exactly Manhattan where the prosecutors go after the gun owner because you weren't supposed to own a gun in the first place. But we salute you for using a firearm responsibly to defend your life and or home. So the most, speaking of 911, the most 911 calls in all of Seattle, there is one block that yields more 911 calls than anywhere else. Can anyone guess what prominent county building is on that block? It's between 3rd and 4th Avenue. And off the top of my head, I know it's not Jefferson, but let me just cut to the chase. King County Courthouse. King County Courthouse is responsible. That neighborhood, not inside the courthouse. But my God, 911, a man's just been found guilty. No, it's the sidewalks. It's the neighborhood there at the north end of Pioneer Square. For more than a month, Seattle bike, horse, and foot patrol, also narcotics officers, have been patrolling the neighborhood in response to the reports of violence, threats, and lewd behavior. This is after judges and court staff met with Seattle police and said that it is dangerous just getting from your car to the courthouse. And it's also having a deleterious effect on jury duty here. So wait till you hear that. According to court staff, for instance, a man assaulted three people outside the courthouse on June 19th. On June 28th, A court staffer said they were hit in the arm and elbow while walking near the 4th Avenue entrance. Superior Court Judge Sean O'Donnell said assaults, harassment, exposure, people getting spit in the face, defecation on the courthouse steps. It's a serious and urgent problem. O'Donnell has talked to city and county council members. He said Seattle Mayor Jenny Durkan is aware of the problem. Yeah! The county has reopened the courthouse's 4th Avenue entrance to give people an alternative to the 3rd Avenue entrance. Boy, that's responsive. And so this is a huge issue down here. And here's why it's a huge issue in our story. Emily Elder was on jury duty yesterday. She looked across the street from the courthouse steps towards the downtown emergency service center. The soon-to-be graduate student said her father drove her to court from Issaquah to make sure she would be safe. Quote, he was worried about the surrounding area, and he wanted me to be safe. It's surprising seeing so much authority down here that there's so much of a problem. Criminal activity of all kinds near the courthouse. You'd expect a place like a courthouse to be a little bit more well-kept, close quote. Well, Miss Highfalutin Issaquah, let me tell you something about downtown Seattle. I don't know how they run things there in Issy, but in downtown Seattle, anything goes. She said court staff advised jurors to use the 4th Avenue, not the 3rd Avenue entrance. So that's where we're at.
And right outside of the courthouse there is a park. It's a Pioneer Square Park of some kind. And Sally Bagshaw of the city council wanted to add ping pong tables in order to make the park safer.
Midnight ping pong?
Yes.
Why? Because city of the Hall kind of, park. Because of the scoff laws that ping pong attracts are somehow going to be self-policing or something.
Right. Well, yes, it'll attract a different type of people, which will then push out apparently the homeless and the drug users.
Well, I say that's a capital top-notch idea. In fact, I'm going to do her one more. We should put in polo grounds. We should absolutely, I say polo for the homeless.
Yeah!
I say three or four chuckers of polo and they'll all be too exhausted to shoot heroin into their genitals or snort meth off each other's foreheads.
Make it look like the gardens of Versailles.
Absolutely. Well, it gets better. One courthouse employee reported that on April 10, someone grabbed at a shoulder holster outside the building while another started shouting at them. A third man was defecating on the side of the building, not on the steps, on the side of the building. I mean, that requires some acrobatics. The employee said she then encountered another man masturbating on the sidewalk a few blocks away, according to one report. I'm not quite sure if he was using the sidewalk or that was a senior. So this is your King County courthouse, everyone. You have the guy with the defecation, the whole thing. Here's the sad part. A 78-year-old Woodinville man, in his letter declining jury service, told courthouse staff that Seattle is, quote, terrifying to me, close quote. I would have no way of defending myself, he wrote. I did serve years ago and was proud to do so, but with the present state of affairs, now I am fearful, close quote. That was a letter mailed to court staff on June 2nd. Another person also wrote they are worried about the safety of 3rd Avenue. We as Seattle citizens are encouraged to take public transportation. Individuals have harassed, thrown soda cans, urinated on the sidewalk, etc. at that bus stop. Folks, do you understand? The kind of people that would take out a physical piece of paper and write a letter to decline jury duty, those are the kind of people you want on jury duty. A 78-year-old man is terrified to come down to the courthouse in Seattle? What the hell? Maybe cut back on the masturbation and defecation, and you might have some people with a conscience, I should say, instead of the 12 people who can't get out of jury duty doing your jury service. We'll be back right after this. It is Brian Suits filling in at Dark Secret Place on the Twitter machine, if you're on the Twitter, at Dark Secret Place. This is the Jason Rand Show, AM 770 KTTH. Welcome back. It's the Jason Rand Show, AM 770 KTTH. Brian sits in here for the week. And if you go back in Seattle radio, you remember Kennedy on our former FM talk station. And she started here in Seattle. And great things have fallen her way. She now has a show on Fox Business Channel, Fox Business Network, FBN, as we call it. And I do a weekly hit, so I'm going to be on tonight. I think we're going to be talking about Helsinki and Trump and stuff like that. So you will get a chance to see how awesome I look now. And Lisa Kennedy looks great. After since she left Seattle, two kids doing triathlons. So she looks terrific. So that's a weekly thing that I do on Fox Business Channel, and they're good folks. They're good folks to work for, especially since I don't have to live in New York to do it. So that's gonna be tonight. I forgot her first name, but Ocasio-Cortez hyphenated, the woman who surprisingly, especially with the Democrats, she just unseated a longtime Democrat congressman in the Bronx. In a primary, and it's a sure thing. It's a solid blue district, and so she's going to be in Congress. She's going to be, and this, by the way, she's not the first socialist to be in Congress. Just like Bernie was a, quote, independent, when he was first a senator, as he still is. And for those of you who don't know Bernie's history, Bernie Sanders just became a Democrat the year before the election. The Democratic Party, a private organization, could have unendorsed him. Any party with discipline would have said, "No, you don't just come in here. You don't just put on the hat and walk in here. You're going to screw up our sure thing. You're going to hypnotize people who can't do math by telling them that you can have free college and all kinds of free stuff, and that somehow the magical golden goose is going to continue making rainbow-powered love machines, unicorn factories, and strawberry-scented welfare checks." So that's what they should have done. Okay, so now they have another one. Now there's another one. This 29-year-old, who was, of course, a Bernie volunteer, she calls herself a Democratic Socialist. From what I read, literally has never worked a day in her life, never had a real job, and volunteering at soup kitchens, not a real job. Is there dignity in your charity? Of course there is. The line forms here to admire your great generosity. But, there's quite a bit to learn when you actually enter the private sector and have a job. So she sat down. The old William F. Buckley show, Firing Line, which is iconic, has been rebooted at the Heritage Foundation. Margaret Hoover is the host, and she's entirely too nice. But so here she is asking Ms. Ocasio-Cortez all about the future of capitalism and our red-hot economy.
Now, the economy is going pretty strong, right? There's roughly 4% unemployment, 3.9% unemployment. Do you think that capitalism has failed to deliver for working-class Americans, or is no longer the best vehicle for working-class Americans?
Well, I think the numbers that you just talked about is part of the problem, right? Because we look at these figures and we say, oh, unemployment is low, everything is fine, right? Well, unemployment is low because everyone has two jobs.
Mm-hmm.
Unemployment is low because people are working 60, 70, 80 hours a week and can barely feed their kids. And so I do think that right now, when we have this no-holds-barred, Wild West hyper-capitalism, what that means is profit at any cost. Capitalism has not always existed in the world, and it will not always exist in the world.
Quick little heads up. There's never been a movement in human history that has brought more people into prosperity and health than capitalism. Full stop, period. I mean, that's just that. And with all due respect to Ms. Guevara, I'm sorry, Ocasio-Cortez, at the age of 29, she may not know this, and many of you millennials may not know this either, but there was a world right before you were born, and it was far more violent than this one. You live right now in the United States. You live in, and here on Earth in 2018, you live in the healthiest, most prosperous, and yes, most non-violent time in human history. Go ahead, debate me. But here's the thing that cracks me up is how many jobs you have is not a measurement of unemployment. She said, well, the unemployment numbers are low because everyone has two jobs. That's not how they measure unemployment. And that's great that people have. If you want to work two jobs, that's a great thing about America.
It's not gross number of jobs occupied.
No, It's number of people not claiming unemployment. We used to have these janitors here at Eastlake. A pair of Russian couples who came here with nothing. They had three janitorial jobs per day. They just cranked them out in about 2 or 3 hours. Then they went to the next one. And a couple months later, they had a van. And a couple months later, they had two vans. And then they had logos on the vans. Anyway. All right, I'll be back tomorrow. Brian Suits, you can reach me at Dark Secret Place on Twitter. And I'll see you Wednesday morning here on the Jason Rancho, AM 770 KTTH. Rush is next.